Timeless Voyager Radio. Self-development radio for the open mind. Interviews with leading-edge authors and speakers, psychic phenomena and the unexplained, UFOs, extraterrestrial encounters, government cover-ups, alternative healthcare, new technologies. And now, Bruce Stephen Holmes for Timeless Voyager Radio.
I'm Bruce Stephen Holmes, the Timeless Voyager, and I'm back here with Swami Atmananda. I wanted to give Swami a chance to talk more about these steps. We finished with the second step, or have we finished with the second step?
We have finished with the second step.
Then let's talk a little bit about the third step.
Thank you very much. And in the third step, here we should be a little more technical as regards the yoga. Mm-hmm. You see, every human body and the mind, they act through seven centers, which can be compared to nerve plexuses, but with a more and a deeper significance.
Now, nerve
plexuses.
Nerve plexus.
Oh, nerve plexuses. Okay, like the solar plexus, the different plexus. Oh, we're talking about the chakras.
Chakras.
Okay, the chakras. All right.
So we will use the word chakra
since
on common agreement.
Okay. Well, we can use nerve plexus now.
Well, he's a neurologist.
All right.
So he knows it in more detail, but for everyone else, we'll say chakra.
But chakra will be more appreciable because people do understand mm-hmm. these chakras, and they've got a more classical ring to their meaning when we use it during discussion on yoga.
Before we even go, let's just stop 1 second on this. We don't find, do we find these centers in the physical body? I mean, do we find them as ganglia, or are they really not in the physical body?
These chakras are really in the astral body, but they have got some corresponding existence with the different nerve plexuses.
All right.
I'll be a little technical at this time because it will make our understanding easier, that since you have raised the point that whether they are in the physical body or in the astral body, so let us try to correlate. Mm-hmm. The lowermost chakra can be compared to sacrococcygeal nerve plexus.
All right, so this is down in the sacrum.
Yeah, below the sacrum, near around the coccyx.
Oh, near the coccyx, right, the actual base of...
Yeah.
All right,
bottom.
Base of the spine.
The next higher center or chakra, which controls the generative organs, is known as hypogastric plexus. The next higher, which we say the Manipura center, or which deals with digestion of food and metabolism and producing energy, that is the, can be called the solar plexus. More technically, the celiac plexus corresponds to this third center. Then the next higher center is the air center, or also known as heart center, known as Anahata chakra, corresponds to cardiopulmonary plexus.
All right.
Then the next one behind the neck in the cervical region is laryngopharyngeal plexus, where also included the cervical ganglia. Then the soul center, the exact location has not been known, but it is said that it lies around the hypothalamo-pituitary axis and the pineal gland in this region. Yeah, it corresponds to 3 inches deep inside the midpoint of the eyebrows. This is the sixth center where they say the soul is functioning from that center. And then the topmost is the known as the thousand petal lotus or Sahasrar. They say it is the symbolic seat of the unmanifest formless God. So these seven centers are there. But it is the soul which is the only power which activates through the six centers, and through these six centers it enjoys the world. All the activities. Bottom center, earning money, wealth, Sex center, enjoying sexually procreation. Food center, eating and drinking. Heart center, various propensities and emotions. And the cervical center, various spiritual activities, higher activities. These are done only by the soul.
Now the soul, does this, I was going to call this the crown chakra, but you, the thousand petaled lotus, whatever we call it, is, I've heard that that is actually above the head. It's not.
No, the above the thousand petaled lotus, there is another center known as the eighth center. And that is also known as chakra. That is not brought into discussion because that is the infinite aspect of the finite. Up to here, it is finite form. That is represents the formless aspect. So usually, that is not brought into the practice. That is in the usual way. But in the extraordinary state, in advanced students can practice that, can utilize that center also in their spiritual practice.
So we'll stay with the seven.
We'll stay with seven.
Okay.
Good. That we agree.
Now you said that the soul enjoys life through the six
centers.
So the soul being the seventh center itself. Is that correct?
Soul, you see, soul is the individual aspect of the all-pervading God. There is a beautiful formula. I cannot resist the temptation of expressing it in Sanskrit.
Right.
I will translate it. Shanskar mukta jiv, shanskar yukta jiv, shanskar mukta shiv. Shanskar means every person has come to this world after many, many incarnations. And all these impressions of various incarnations, even including this life, is covering up the power of the soul, which makes him an individual soul. Whereas, when once one becomes free from these impressions, that means free from time and space and its conditions, he becomes Shiv. Shiv means God. So this is the distinction. Our practice is the struggle to make the individual soul the universal soul.
And the idea is to realize this.
This is the realization.
In this incarnation, that would be the optimum.
Yeah. That is our aim in life.
Right.
You're right.
So this was actually the beginning. We're going to understand now the third step.
Yeah.
So we were talking about
the
seven
step.
Centers, the nerve plexus, which is how we all started on this.
Yeah.
All right.
So what we do in the third step, we channelize the vital force in the six centers. In combination with our breathing, then without combination with our breathing.
So are we talking about moving the kundalini? Is that what we're talking about?
I am purposefully avoiding the
okay.
word kundalini.
All right, I'm sorry. Well, I pulled it right out, so we can let it go.
Right. Because I am not using the term kundalini because many people have got many wrong ideas about
right.
it.
So you're using the word...
We are using the word prana.
Prana or life force.
Life force.
Or energy. All right.
Sorry. Okay.
Someone will call on the phone and ask me that that's what it is. So.
Okay. At a later stage, we will have a talk
all
about
right.
kundalini as well.
All right. So the third step then is?
By taking help of our breathing power, we channelize the vital force or the pranic force in the six centers so that the consciousness is transformed into super consciousness and we can take our mind beyond our thought to the state of perception of the infinite.
All right, so now my question is, you use the word consciousness and super consciousness. Why, and can you give us a little bit of an understanding then of those two terms?
Yeah, super consciousness is synonymous with power of God.
Consciousness. So is that the realization of unity, in a sense?
Yes, unity of the individual soul with universal soul.
So this is the realization of the Atman.
Yes, perceiving your Atman.
Okay.
Yeah.
And consciousness, then,
is the individual consciousness. That means you are not conscious about your super conscious state. That means your limitedness is preventing you from realizing your unlimitedness.
So in the limitedness, we at least realize that we are here. I know that I am here. I know that my body has changed. I keep looking at it and thinking that it's the same, but it's not. So that's my consciousness.
Yeah.
Superconscious is when I realize my own divinity.
Yeah. The power of God. You are the power of God, and it is the power of God which is acting, not your ego.
All right. So the third step is the breathing techniques, which allow. I'm sorry. Is that
right? We utilize the breathing technique to revitalize these centers or chakras. And to transcend them, to go from this physical, mental, and astral to the spiritual or to the soul.
Or to the thoughtlessness stage.
Yeah,
right.
To that thoughtlessness stage, which is also known as, many people may misunderstand this word thoughtlessness.
Mm-hmm.
So we utilize that, it goes to 100% or absolute concentration of the mind.
Absolute.
Yeah.
That would be the experience of the unmanifest aspect.
Yeah.
Right. Is that the third step then?
This is the third step.
All right.
Now, you see, through practicing first step, second step, and third step, the mind comes into certain state that it goes into the super conscious state.
All right.
It goes beyond the body consciousness, it goes beyond the thoughts, and it is perceiving the infinity. These three steps lead to this state automatically.
Okay.
So the first three steps are preparatory to the fourth step, which is also known as deep meditation beyond mentation. That means beyond thought. Deep meditation beyond thought and beyond body consciousness. This is a real aim.
Mm-hmm.
Then this is the fourth step. After fourth step, we introvert our mind and senses, so the power is withdrawn from each vital power, pranic force is withdrawn from each sense, and we perceive the divine light. This is the fifth step.
So now the divine light, is this the same divine light we were talking about before?
Exactly.
But so we're really not going to have the divine light until we get to the fifth step. Or
yes,
we have to ignore.
You may, but we have to ignore.
So right now we have a procedure.
Yeah. Now here we have a technique, a procedure to perceive that light in its full glory.
Right.
In earlier stages we may be able to perceive it, but not in its full glory.
All right.
But here in this fifth step, we perceive that light in full divine glory. And you become calm, contented. And the mind is not agitated anymore. The other significant aspect of this technique is, we also agree that stars and planets have got their effect on the human body and mind. So they may be good or positive, they may be negative or evil. Both are mediated through stars and planets.
Hmm.
So by this technique, fifth technique, we can neutralize the evil effects of stars and planets on our system. This is also another aspect of the fifth step. our zodiac is within our spine.
Now, what is that word?
Zodiac.
Zodiac.
Okay, but you said our zodiac.
Zodiac.
Zodiac, okay.
Okay, and now I'll correct it.
That's all right.
Zodiac.
I wasn't sure, I mean, so the zodiac. So the zodiac.
Zodiac.
The 12...
planetary signs.
Yeah, the constellations.
Yeah.
The effects, or the understanding of the different representations that each sign of the zodiac has, is contained in everyone.
Yeah, in these six centers in the ascending order, six centers in the descending order.
So we have six and six, which is the 12.
Yeah.
And we are able then to do what? Bring more harmony?
More harmony, less suffering, more accelerated spiritual evolution.
How many steps are there?
5 steps.
Oh, 5, oh good. I was going to get out some more tape. All right, so these are the 5 steps. Now, is this done then through light? This one is done through light. Now, the reason we ignore light before is because we don't know what to do with the light. Is that correct?
No, you see, if you can get this light in the first step, you don't have to practice all these techniques.
I see. You're already at step 5.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
All right.
You have reached the goal, you see.
Okay, now, when we say the light, though, we're not talking about the cognition of light. We're talking about the knowledge, the integrated aspect of understanding what the light is about. So we're not just talking about closing your eyes and seeing white light. I mean, when I say white light, I don't mean this divine light now. Because with the divine light comes the understanding of what it is for, I guess.
With the perception of the divine light, your mind and intellect and the vital force of prana gets transformed into supernatural or the super consciousness. This light has got that vibratory power which transforms the mind to perceive the superconscious.
Now the superconscious then is where we have cognition or understanding or...
Cognition means
or we're
by
unified.
Senses.
Yeah.
You mean cognition by senses.
Yeah.
But you have to go beyond the senses to perceive the person who is the source of all senses.
Right.
So, by this technique, the mind gets that capacity, that power to perceive that.
So, are we talking about being able to talk with God?
You can perceive Him as your own self.
Right.
Because God, by definition, is all-pervading, omniscient, omnipotent, and cannot be described by the senses, cannot be perceived by the senses.
So, this is where we have to transcend the senses.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
All right, so those are the 5 steps.
Yes.
Let's take a moment, digress for a second. We have Yogacharya Laizan Ma. You wanted to bring up a few points before, and I wanted to get to them now. So
we were talking earlier about Paramahansaji, Paramahansa Yogananda, being the disciple of Lahiri Baba. It was Lahiri Baba who gave a prophecy to Sri Yukteswar that he was sending him a highly realized spiritual master. And that is the connection between Lahiri Baba and Paramahansa Yogananda.
So, just to review, because I think
yes.
we've been through so much at this point that I myself have lost track of what we're talking
right.
about in the beginning. We were talking about the actual lineage. Is that correct?
Yes, we are
okay.
talking about the lineage.
And
Babaji being the first supreme master who has always incarnated himself. It says in the 4th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when the world falls into unrighteousness, I incarnate myself forth. So Babaji continually incarnates from age to age and brings back the technique.
So we have that start point here.
In the 1860s,
okay.
He came.
All right.
He appeared to Lahiri Baba.
All right, and then Who studied, or who was the disciple of Lahiri Baba then?
Sri Yukteswar.
Okay,
Sri. He was known as the Lion of Bengal. Right. And we, Swami Hari Harananda, our living master, that is the ashram that he has resided in since 1938.
Now, Paramahansa Yogananda also was a disciple of Sri Yukteswar,
yes,
is that correct?
Yes, he was, and he was extremely high. All these gurus were extremely highly realized. And when we talk about God realization, we're talking about the Nirvikalpa Samadhi stage, where they have gone totally beyond all human limitations and have merged into the divine consciousness, their consciousness never wavering from God. And they also have the pulselessness, breathlessness stage.
Which is samadhi?
Which is, there are six stages of samadhi.
Oh, there are, okay.
The final one being the Nirvikalpa stage.
Okay, Nirvikalpa meaning
right.
No pulse and
no breath.
So for all practical purposes, it seems like the person is clinically dead.
Jesus said, I die daily. Mm-hmm. It's a very obscure meaning. What does this really mean? He had the pulselessness stage. So Paramahansa Yogananda continually showed it in America to people. And I've personally seen Swami Hari Harananda several times in this stage for more than 45 minutes at a time with doctors present.
Well, even more
present.
Than a few minutes is it's a lot.
No, it was a long time.
Let me ask you a question. Sure. As long as you're talking, let's take the term guru. Right, it is so widely used,
yes,
to mean so many different things. Why don't we get what I believe to be the definition? Give us the definition according to what you understand as to what guru means and who a guru is and what a guru is.
Let me go on several different points. Gu and ru are two Sanskrit words, meaning from darkness to light, from ignorance to knowledge, or wisdom. And also, God is so very vast that without a spiritual teacher, guru is also teacher, just simply a teacher. Someone who teaches you something is also loosely said as my guru. But we are referring to it as our personal aspect of God. I cannot know God because He's so vast. But through my guru, and by watching His every action, and by taking His counsel in my life, He totally changed my life. And has given me the taste of God. So without a living spiritual master, you cannot attain God. You cannot attain that wisdom. Now for me, He is my guru. And that is, I can't begin to express what that means to me. 16 years ago when I met Him, I had seen several different gurus. And I had two criteria, because I wanted someone who spoke English, fluent in English, because I knew I was missing so much in the translation. And I thought that when I met my guru would know everything there was to know about me. And that was true when I met Hari Harananda. He may not know my day-to-day activity on a mundane level, but even on that, He advises me and guides me. I've never met anyone like Hari Harananda. I lived in India for a year. I met many different gurus there, but I've never seen a guru who could. He knows exactly what is in your mind at every moment. He has that access.
So in general, these are the criteria that a guru should fill.
Yes. for me, that is what my guru had to be.
Swami.
I have got something to tell about the meaning of the word guru. It is a very commonly used term, and the common meaning is teacher. From whomever you learn something, he becomes your guru. But in spirituality and the spiritual practice, it has got a deeper meaning. These two Sanskrit words, gu and ru, gu means the hidden entity, which is the soul. And ru means rupa, that means the visible body, which is shining and projecting outside. So the person who enables us to realize that divine hidden entity, divine hidden entity, in this visible form, which is exposed, which is not hidden, is the real spiritual teacher. So the common usage of the word guru is teacher, and in spirituality it has got a higher meaning, that he represents God. The unmanifest God manifest and personifies in the spiritual teacher. And it is worthwhile mentioning here that the real guru should have full control over his senses. He has full access to the thoughts of the disciple, who has got infinite spiritual knowledge, so much so that he is a realized person, and who has attained the state of nirvikalpa samadhi, or this state of pulselessness and breathlessness state, that is the highest spiritual ecstasy. This should be the minimum qualification when we should choose a guru. The meaning is this significant.
Now, there must not be a lot of these people to go around.
You are right. You are right.
But
thank you very much.
In Kriya, when people take the body purification and initiation, we do not demand that you accept Hariharyananda as your guru. If you have a guru that you love, that can stay your guru. But you accept this as your Kriya Yoga teacher or master.
Well, now, wouldn't there be some conflict there, though, don't you think? If you were to have a guru who taught some particular...
Most people have taken initiation from many people mm-hmm. in the West. And they've learned something, or they've learned a lot. And if that person is bringing up the bhakti, the love and joy in them, mm-hmm. then why should they give that up?
So, for example, people who've taken Jesus... the Christ.
Right.
They can still be initiated in Kriya and still follow their own religious values.
They'll know the teachings, they'll come to know through the meditation mm-hmm. more fully the teachings of Jesus Christ and what it really meant. Mm-hmm. And I'm born a Christian. This is a non-sectarian technique. And I know more about Jesus now than ever, and I'm so happy. But we also recognize Jesus, Moses, Krishna, Daniel, mm-hmm. Abraham, Divine Mother, all the saints and sages. They're all one.
So that's what you mean by being able to learn the technique and at the same time keep a particular guru if that's your need.
Yes, if that's your need.
But it would be nice, I guess, then to meet and sit with Swami Hariharyananda.
It is divine.
Because that would be the thing that you would really want to do.
Yes.
Right? To actually sit with your guru, the physical and the spiritual representative.
Yes, both.
Both. So just coming back to the term guru, then, the highest form of guru is this one that is not just the teacher, but is the personification of the teaching.
You're right.
Would that be
exactly
the way to say
very,
that?
Very well put.
All right. I had made a few other notes. I wanted to, was there something else? Wait,
I'd like to.
Right, that's right. That's right. There was something else you wanted to clear up. Okay.
That Swami Atmananda said before, we stress very much that you're not to give up the world. You're not to change your dress. You're not. All you're to do is to add meditation to your life. 15 minutes in the morning, 15 minutes in the evening, to your capacity. And this is ideal for householders. I'm a householder. I'm married. My guru found my husband for me. But this is so nice for householders because we have everything in the West, but we also have extreme stress, extreme unhappiness, extreme restlessness. And then if we can go away from that for 15 minutes a day and renew ourselves and breathe, our breath becomes very slow, like we breathe at night. Deep, long, scientific inhalation and exhalation. We're adding years to our lives, removing stress, high blood pressure, so many benefits.
Okay, I wanted to ask you a couple questions. One of them was, we had talked a little while ago about the four steps, or the five steps. And in the second step, you were talking a little bit about, you were certainly talking about health. The question that I was wondering about was, this brings in, I guess, a little bit about nutrition then. Is there an actual diet that a person, now we know that a person doesn't have to do anything, but let's face it, if you do want to make the body more of the temple, then there are certain things that you should definitely do. And do you prescribe certain nutritional dietary information?
This is a very good point you have brought out. Thank you very much. And many people have many superstitious ideas about food and diet and drinks. In Kriyajoga, we tell that we should not be branded or stamped as vegetarian or non-vegetarian or vegetarian, like that. Not such. To whatever diet you have been used to since your birth, whatever diet is permitted by your tradition and time and place, that is your diet. If you are cherishing deepest regard and you are used and you like and love to take more of vegetarian food, it is okay. But we insist that food should be balanced, it should be nutritious, it should promote health, and it should promote well-being, and it should prevent diseases. These are the broad terms we use for your food. You may be a vegetarian, you may not be a vegetarian. For Kriya Yoga, that is immaterial. It should be balanced and nutritious food.
So we're back to balance again, a balanced diet. I mean, this is so balanced, easy, we hear it all the time.
Yeah, you're right.
Right. Swamiji says, eat what you can digest. Mm-hmm.
But as you change, and now we all know, as your body vibration changes, there are certain things that you can't eat any longer. You begin to change, your tastes begin to change too. Isn't that why we see that certain people of high vibration do not eat meat?
At that stage, the stage which you are talking about, at that stage, your instincts guide you. There is no hard and fast rule.
Okay.
So if your inclination prevents you from taking flesh food, it is okay. But please see that your body does not suffer due to lack of nutrition.
So the most important thing here then is that we understand that once again, as we're changing our consciousness to super consciousness or super conscious, whatever,
yeah.
Unified consciousness, enlightenment, whatever happens, the body begins to change also. I mean, they're intimately connected. So, I mean, you don't have to worry about whether you should, how you should eat or what you should do, but rather just take care of one area and the rest will follow along.
Your instinct.
Yeah.
You begin to rely more on your instinct.
What? Let's talk about a few titles. What? These are questions that that people have all the time, and I thought I'd try to find out. We have the title Swami. What does the title Swami mean, and how does a person get that title?
The literal meaning of Swami is master. Swa means the soul, I am. That means I am the master. That means I am the soul. So this is, the meaning is, a person who is given the title of Swami is devoting most of his time and identifying himself with a soul. And this is the meaning. But organizationally speaking, you see, it has got a deeper meaning. But to make a long story short, the monks who have taken the vow of celibacy, of sense control, and devoting their time and energy in the pursuit of spiritual path, they are given this title of Swami after they take certain vows, these vows, and their spiritual masters gives them a name, and this title is added to it.
So you don't make these things up. I mean, that's the thing I'd like to get across to the audience, the listening audience. It's not as though you give yourself a title or...
No, there's the monk society in India that is very active, and they determine if this person can become a monk. The first they're brahmacharya, and then the monk society and the... What is the name of the...
There is not exactly a society, but the spiritual master, if he is a monk, if he's following the monastic order, he's entitled to judge a person whether he is fit to get this monkhood, so that he gives him this monkhood and calls him Swami and a name, to which the term Ananda is added. Ananda means
bliss.
Divine bliss.
Yeah.
But the Shankaracharya are usually present, and the other monks. This is a public...
Either Shankaracharyas or their representatives, or they can even give their permission verbally, it's okay.
So is this done at any of the great celebrations that they have in India, because the Shankaracharya is not always available publicly?
You mean like the Kumbh Mela or
Kumbh
something?
Kumbh Mela or something like that. Do you have...
At that time, it takes up in a very large scale. But at other times also, in their institutions, the spiritual masters can give this monkhood, the Swami order, or the Swami title, to their fit candidates, whom they think he has achieved the state of that.
So we have... What order do we have here? We have Brahmacharya, and you're Yogacharya. Now, what is Yogacharya? Is that...
Acharya means a teacher.
Okay.
So a person who is entitled or authorized to teach yoga of that particular master is given the title of Yogacharya.
Now, yoga meaning union, not necessarily just hatha yoga.
No,
union of God, union of body and soul, union with God.
Shortly speaking, union of the consciousness with the super consciousness.
All right. So, what do we have here as order? Is Yogacharya the one of them? I mean, there's what titles do we have?
Well,
Yogacharya, Brahmacharya.
I will, to make a little more clear.
Great.
I'll go into the short aspect of the Indian way of life, the Hindu way of life.
Mm-hmm.
In ancient times, when we are talking about Shakta Yuga, the era of truth, at that time, this system of sannyas monkhood was different. Its value was different. Subsequently, to prevent deterioration in the spiritual standard of people, the spiritual masters laid down certain laws. Now, before these laws came into effect, a person's life was divided into four stages. First stage is Brahmacharya, or the student state. During student career, he is supposed to devote his entire time and energy in the pursuit of knowledge, sense control, mind control. This is state of brahmacharya. They are known as brahmacharis. After that, they are qualified to become householders. They go out, take a profession, earn money, get married, raise a family, maintain the family. This is householder. When they become old, though not very old, let us say around the age of 70, they take up this state of third state of life known as Vanaprasthas, means retirement stage. They retire to the outskirts of the town, only husband and wife. Only husband and wife live together with bare necessities of day-to-day life. The fourth stage was known as Sannyas, where they leave everything and they go out into the forest only with the clothes they wear. They don't take any possession, entirely at the mercy of God, spending their entire time in meditation. No more concern about the body, how it lives or how it doesn't live. This state, fourth state of every person was there before the new rules came into effect around the age, let us say, 6th or 7th century AD. And the person who brought this change is known as Shankaracharya, is the great saint. What he did to protect religion and to protect spirituality and the social standards, what he did, he reorganized that if a person will devote his entire time and energy to the pursuit of spirituality and knowledge, he does not have to pass through the state of householder and retired person. From the state of brahmachari, he straight gave them monkhood after doing certain tests.
Right.
So these brahmacharis, when they were promoted, they became sannyasis with the name of Swami so and so.
Now the sannyasi is the one who wears the orange.
You are right.
Right.
Yeah. And the brahmacharis wear white.
Alright.
So this is the state of affair now which is being followed.
Now after Swami, is there anything after Swami?
Yeah.
Of course.
After Swami, there, depending on their spiritual realization and attainments, they become Paramahansa.
Maharaj.
Maharaj is an honorific title. It is not a sannyasi name. Honorific title. And then they become...
What kind of a title now?
Honorific.
Honorific title.
Yeah.
Okay, so it doesn't, it's an honorary, like an honorary doctorate.
No, not like that.
You didn't earn it. Oh,
see,
no. I'm sorry. So what does it mean?
Meaning, Maharaj means, the literal meaning of Maharaj is a king.
Okay.
Raj means royal.
Mm-hmm.
Maha means great. So a great king is known as a Maharaj.
Right.
But to honor people, he is a Maharaj, he is a king in the spiritual realm. People call him Maharaj. So that has got nothing to do with his sannyasi state.
Okay.
Then he can be a Paramahansa sannyasi, where he no more adheres to any rules or regulations which was previously being followed by the ordinary monk.
Okay.
He remains
always...
Well,
this has to do with a certain state of reality, a
yeah.
level of consciousness.
He always remains in God's intoxicated
right.
state.
All right.
Then there is a state of Jivan Mukta.
Okay.
Jivan Mukta means he has got permanent transformation into the superconscious state. He will be working like an ordinary person, yet he is anchored always in the divine. He does not identify anymore with his physical body, physical environment.
Now Jivan meaning coming from Jiva.
Jivan Mukta, freedom from the state of Jiva or the creature. He is free from the state of creature.
So, by for all practical purposes, this is not a human being as we know.
Yeah.
Okay.
He may look like a human
right.
being.
He's a superhuman being.
He is,
right.
Well, and above that state is this avatar.
Avatar.
Incarnations.
Right.
incarnation, which you know. Above this avatar is Mahavatar, or the great incarnations, which Babaji Maharaj, our source of inspiration and our main guru, he is a Mahavatar. He guides and helps the others to attain the state of avatarhood and helps them in carrying out their mission.
Well, we've really been through a lot here. This has been a wonderful time. I know that you're busy. I know that you have a lot to do. You're going to be giving a lot of lectures.
And Swami Atmananda has written many articles, and also some of the articles are in some of the books that Swami Harihariananda has written.
Okay.
He has written the Kriya Yoga book. We have the fourth edition of the Kriya Yoga book. He's written a metaphorical interpretation of the Isha Upanishad, Isha meaning God, and he's written Each Human Body is a Bhagavad Gita, and he's also written the first six chapters, his interpretation of the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita pertaining to Kriya Yoga.
Okay, so kind of a commentary.
It is his commentary on the Gita, and he's going to be finishing that. And we hope that he's going to be in this country quite soon.
All right, and that's Swami Harihariananda
Giri. And he's the direct disciple of Sri Yukteswar.
Mm-hmm.
And then he took second Kriya. There's six Kriyas according to the chakras. And the seventh stage is the Nirvikalpa Samadhi stage.
Right.
He took second Kriya from Parma. He took first Kriya from Sri Yukteswar. And then he took second Kriya from Paramahansa Yogananda.
And this is Swami Harihariananda, who you're hoping will be coming to the United States soon.
He will be coming to the United States.
All right, that's a good way to look at it. We are really out of time. I wanted to thank both of you for being on the show. Swami Atmananda, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yogacharya Laizan Ma.
And we want to bow to you, to the divine soul, and to the divine soul within every human being. And we want to bow to the whole universe because it's the living power of God. Thank you very much.
Before closing, we would like to offer a prayer to the all-merciful God. O God, you please make every person free from disease and free from suffering. May all become happy and enjoy peace, bliss, happiness, joy, and prosperity. May all realize their divinity, and may all enjoy in the bliss of super conscious state. Om, peace, peace.